As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Total Soccer Show, and our review of World Cup Day 5, where groups G and H enter the fray. Stadium 974 was the place to be to watch Ronaldo win a weak penalty. And late on, the consequences for Portugal would have been steeper if Iñaki Williams had properly stolen the ball from the keeper. Brazil upheld the hopes of their nation while playing a bizarre formation. Richarlison continued his hot streak, and Alisson's new moustache was pretty sleek. And this World Cup may be in winter, but it was summertime for a Swiss side who'd given Cameroon a mountain to climb. And if you ever find yourself having trouble sleeping, have a recording of Uruguay versus South Korea for safekeeping. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, a man who's cooked the entire TSS gang a Thanksgiving meal, Taylor Rockwell. Incredible stuff.
Thank you very much. It has yet to be finished, so we'll see if it ends up being that I did cook it for you or if we end up ordering pizza. But hopefully it ends up getting finished at some point.
Listener, be warned, this episode may be very short because we can smell the cooking as we record, and it smells delicious. Also, here a man's going to... who's going to eat that entire Thanksgiving meal, in theory, Joe Lowry. Hello.
That sounds good. What are you guys having for dinner? Nothing? Iron Brew?
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. Tea and Iron Brew for you guys. I'll be eating Taylor's wonderful Thanksgiving food.
I feel like Graham would take that. If there was like different versions of Iron Brew, like if we had an Iron Brew ice cream, would that appeal? Or is it just a bottle of Iron Brew? That's all you need.
Well, how is tea and Iron Brew as a diet different to any other day for me?
Also, Graham has multiple times today said, hard to tell if he's being sarcastic or not, that he doesn't like flavor on his food, or like he doesn't like his food to have flavor.
That's a slander.
It is not. It is absolutely not. So I'm not sure if Graham's going to be partaking in Taylor's cooking either way.
That's Graham Rodden you're hearing there. I believe having his first Thanksgiving meal today.
I mean, is it similar to British Christmas dinner? I mean, what do Americans have for Christmas dinner? Is it just the same meal again?
Mostly. Yeah.
I think like Thanksgiving can sometimes be the dry run for like, we didn't do that quite enough. This isn't quite what we were looking for.
Right.
And then you throw an eggnog. I think that's the other one.
Yeah, the dessert changes, I think, and the beverages change more than the food changes.
Right, so it's a dress rehearsal for a month from now.
Yeah, I think I would say that. I think a lot of people are like banging their tables in frustration hearing that because many people love Thanksgiving. I'm definitely more of a Christmas dinner sort of guy.
Oh, I love me a Thanksgiving. Graham, it's essentially like a Christmas meal, except for at the start, you'll have to go around the table and scramble to think of something you're thankful for before it's your turn.
Yeah, Graham, what are you thankful for right now, real quick? Say it in front of everybody and make it very nice and emotional.
Clothes. Why do I want to say clothes?
We broke Graham 2 seconds into this show.
I said last night, Ryan and I were watching a travel show and commenting on how much editing has to happen for those types of shows. And I was saying, I think my ninth circle of hell would be having to edit all of the eating, because those mics are picking up all those sounds. And I feel like for Graham, his worst circle of hell is having to say emotionally kind things or emotional things in general in front of a group of people constantly.
Graham, yes. The correct answer as to what you're thankful for is that this Sunday we're doing a watch along for Spain versus Germany in Brooklyn, New York at Parklife.
Parklife.
going to be fun, right?
It is, indeed. And it'd be great to see as many people there as possible. Spain v. Germany. We've seen both of those teams at this tournament now. That should be a good game.
Really good.
As far as the matches go, obviously it's two marquee teams, but Germany need the points after that shock against Japan. So that game starts at 2. The event starts at 12 o'clock. We're going to have a quiz. We're going to have, obviously, a drink together, some food together. And yeah, it should be fun. $15 a ticket. Links in the description.
Sounds wonderful. Do you know what I'm thankful for? Patreon. Patreon.com/TotalSoccerShow
so
to be
bad.
More precise. I'm thankful for our lovely Patreons who've joined us on there. Joe, we're doing some wonderful content every single gosh darn day of this tournament, aren't we?
We are. We've had behind the scenes videos, which I've really enjoyed. I think that's been my favorite part. And I think from the feedback we've gotten, it's been the patrons' favorite part as well. They've been really enjoying that. So it's been Graham pretending to be Unai Simon, having about as much to do as Unai Simon as he did yesterday. We've had all sorts of behind-the-scenes looks at our recording setup and Thanksgiving and all that stuff. So, yeah, come hang out with us on Patreon or in the Discord.
Yeah.
Or both, really.
I was going to mention the Discord. So the top two tiers of the Patreon come with Discord access. And the Discord has been really fun. The memes and the tactical chat as well. There's a lot of insight. Yeah. Stuff in there as well. So yeah, if that sounds like your thing, subscribe to the Patreon.
Special Black Friday offer as well. It's going to be the exact same price on Black Friday that it was yesterday. So look, please do join us on there.
It was just discounted to begin with. That's all it is. Yeah.
Is that who we are? We're the people who, like, you say it's like 20% off and you look at the actual price tag and it's the exact same thing? Cool,
correct,
cool, cool.
Correct,
I'm good
correct,
with that.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, do join us there. And on today's, as we record on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, our Patreon special podcast is going to be a preview of the USA versus England. Can't hardly wait. Can't hardly wait for that one. Let's get into the main event of this podcast, though. We're going to start talking about today's four games with Portugal 3, Ghana 2, a five-game thriller. Joe, this one was, like most of the games today, slightly pedestrian in the first half, but then it definitely came to life.
First half was quiet, certainly. I was not terribly excited about this game coming in because I think I tried to get Fernando Santos jailed for some sort of war crime before this tournament started. He plays very conservative soccer, and Ghana, I think, are at a pretty major talent deficit relative to most other teams in the World Cup. Not all of them. They do have some really excellent players. Inaki Williams gets some playing time in this game. He starts for them. You have Andre Ayew getting a goal, which is a really big moment in this game. They have Kudus, who I think is a really talented young player. He was back in kind of a central midfield role, and his job was defend, and then run really fast and get forward, and he has the assist for that first goal for Ghana. So Ghana did have some things to show here, but the first half was quiet. That's been a bit of a theme of today and maybe the tournament as a whole. It's taking these teams a little bit to come alive. It's taking them, you know, 45, 50, 60 minutes to really get into the game. I think there's maybe a reason for that is that teams don't want to give up points and they're hesitant to do that unless something changes. A penalty changed this game and it made the second half way more entertaining.
Yeah, Ghana didn't have a single touch of the ball in the opposition box in the first half. And then you combine that with Portugal being a Fernando Santos team, and that kind of tells you a lot about how the first half went. And at halftime, I was genuinely worried this might be one of the dullest days of World Cup soccer in history, because we'd had the 1-0 game with Switzerland as the first game. Then we'd had Uruguay-South Korea, which was one of the worst games of the tournament so far. Then at halftime of this game, it's 0-0, and I was slightly concerned we wouldn't have anything to talk about in the podcast today. Thankfully, the second half, much more entertaining. That doesn't necessarily mean it was good soccer. It was a good soccer match. In fact, I think both these teams are deeply flawed, and it would surprise me if they went on a deep run. Obviously, that was never really on the cards for Ghana. Portugal, in terms of their individual talent, certainly have the ability to go on a deep run. But on the basis of what I saw today, maybe the structure and the general approach of that team is going to let them down.
You say they're deeply flawed. I think I know the answer to this. Who is a manager you've enjoyed at this tournament so far? Like, or what national team have you
Gareth
enjoyed?
Southgate.
Moriyasu, okay. I guess, and the changes that he made in the second half.
If he were managing Portugal, are they still deeply flawed?
Well, he's not Fernando Santos.
That's
so
my
less,
point. Yes,
flawed.
That's what I'm getting at. Yes. Is that sort of what makes you feel like Portugal are? Because I think heading into it, I hadn't been as down on him and therefore wasn't as down on Portugal. So I thought, you never know with Ghana. As a US fan, I've learned you never count Ghana out. And I felt like they did have a lot of talent, but enough talent that I was excited about them. And then I wrote this in the notes as the game went on. I sort of was like, oh, this is why you two were not excited about this game. So I did feel sort of, like in the end, disappointed by the way it played out, at least that first half.
It's like he can't help himself, Fernando Santos. So in the past, like Euro 2016, I would say Fernando Santos did an excellent job. Mm-hmm. You know, he maximized the talent that they had because that wasn't a very talented team. They won the Euros, and now Portugal have the attacking talent to be much more expansive.
Shots fired at Adu, but sure.
The second half, to give Santos some credit, he makes a change, and I think that does make a big difference. So he brings on Leão just after Ghana scored the equaliser. That moves Fernandes into the middle, and until then he'd been in this sort of weird hybrid position out wide where he wasn't really able to impact the game. And it also, that change also got Leão on the pitch, very good player, but yeah, just gives them an outlet. And even things like him drawing defenders away from Yao Felix, who until the second half I'd thought maybe didn't have the space to do anything, he obviously gets his name on the score sheet as well. So that front three of Leão and having Fernandes playing the passes as a supply line, having Felix and then Ronaldo as the focal point, that seems like a much more effective front line. So there were, to give Santos credit, and I'm saying this through gritted teath, mm-hmm, the change did help things.
You pretty much are. It does feel like it's physically.
That's generally how I talk, though. So.
Joe, I wasn't expecting this to be quite as even a contest as it was, with Ghana being the lowest ranked team in the tournament, with them having a pretty inexperienced coach, with them playing a Portugal side who have a lot more weapons. Were you surprised by what Ghana offered at all?
No, not really. I think they came out and played in a very predictable but also smart way up until the game descended into chaos after they get the equalizer in, what was that, the 73rd minute. They come out in this 5-3-2 shape. A lot of teams have used a back three, back five. That is relatively common around the world in soccer at this point. And they defend. Now, it's not that they didn't have outlets. I mentioned Kudus earlier playing as a left-sided central midfielder. That struck me as a little bit of an irregular role. Not one we've never seen him in before. We have seen it in the past. But for Ajax, he plays in a slightly different position, or has been this year. So they have players like Kudus. They have Inaki Williams. They have Ayew, who are ready to go out on the break. But in the first half, they were hyper-focused on making Portugal's life miserable, which, to be fair, if you play a somewhat competent low block, is actually quite easy to do because of all the reasons that Graham's mentioned. Santos is very conservative. This team doesn't seem to have a lot of ideas against a low block. So that made sense to me. What made a little less sense to me, and Taylor, maybe you have a different opinion on this, but Portugal get the penalty from Ronaldo. Ryan, you mentioned it in your intro. I felt it was a bit soft. I think there probably is contact there. I understand the call at the end of the day. Portugal go 1-0 up thanks to Ronaldo in the 65th minute. At this point, I thought the game was over. Right? I thought this thing was done. Ghana now have to start pushing a bit forward. And shockingly, and I really was shocked, they get a goal. Ayew scores a really nice goal in the 73rd minute. I described Kudus getting that assist earlier. And then the problem here for Ghana is, I think at that point, you almost have to say, all right, we got our point back. Mm-hmm. Now it's time to bunker again. We had great success bunkering in the first half. Have them throw on Leão. Where is he going to dribble to against our low block? Where is he going to go? There's no room for him to attack. I think that's that would have been the right decision for Ghana. Instead, the game goes to chaos, really, in that second half. And they're still a bit too stretched. They're too open. And it's one goal, and it's another goal really, really quickly for Portugal. And then Ghana go and get another one back in the 89th. But it really is done at that point, barring an almost viral mistake from Diogo Costa. But I felt like, Taylor, they were too stretched in the second half.
Yeah, I think if you look at the way they play in the first, obviously they're very defensive. They're about keeping the shape. They're about not getting exposed or leaving those spaces open for Portugal to attack. Because despite Fernando Santos, Portugal still have plenty of attackers who can do that on an individual basis, but also as a team. And I think with Ghana like sitting deeper, obviously they don't get nearly as many attacking opportunities, but it gives them certainly more defensive security so that even if somebody does lose the ball, you still have numbers around them. As they get more stretched, as they get more open, they do get that goal, but it also felt like they sort of were still as reckless on the ball, but now they're wide open, now their space is in behind. And both the second and third goal for Portugal coming from basically needless turnovers from Ghana that left them exposed, that left them spread, that left huge gaps for very talented individuals to exploit. In some ways, Ghana deserve credit for getting back into this one. I'm with you, Joe. It felt like, okay, that's it. We can stop watching. They get back in, but in some ways they also are sort of to blame for letting this one get away from them.
Yeah, one thing I really didn't understand was why Kudus comes off almost immediately after the equalizer. Obviously, he plays a key role in the equalizer, but just his role of the amount of ground that he was covering in that deeper midfield role, you take him off. I think that contributes to all of a sudden Ghana being wide open. And I think that has to be one of the worst subs at the World Cup so far, because both on the defensive side of the ball and the attacking side of the ball, I thought Ghana had started to find the wide areas and get the ball forward. forward, and Kudus had been a big part of that, not just in terms of his passing, but in terms of how he squeezes out of tight spaces. And from that moment on, it just, as you both of you say, it just felt like chaos from Ghana.
You know what substitute I'm guessing you enjoyed, but still made you annoyed?
Which one?
Rafael Leão coming on, because I do believe there was a moment, I can't remember if you were in the room or if we heard you from a different room, when you screamed, "Play Leão, you coward," which did make me very happy and was also accurate.
Yes, indeed.
All right, more on that one a little later. With this game at 3-2, 10 minutes into injury time at the end of this game, we had almost one of the craziest incidents of the World Cup, or certainly it would have been of this World Cup. Iñaki Williams hiding behind the goalkeeper, Diogo Costa, to come in and take the ball off of his feet when he put it down for a goal kick. Taylor, WrestleMania 9 in Las Vegas in the 90s, there was a bout between Yokozuna.
I wish listeners could see how blank my face is right now. Go ahead.
Yokozuna and Bret Hitman Hart. Bret Hitman Hart's celebrating because he thinks he's won the match. Yokozuna comes up behind and throws like chalk in his eyes and pins him down. That's what that feels like to me.
That is a better illustration. Mine was going to be when I think I have a great joke ready and then I'm so excited to say it that I stumble over my own words, because it almost comes off. Iñaki Williams almost gets this. Diogo Costa has no idea he's there. He rolls it out. Williams comes running around and you can see him lose his footing. I'm guessing part of that is the ground, but I have to believe a little bit. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And then he can't quite do it. I'm sure the levels
just happened.
I'm sure the levels love that. But it felt like for 1 second, because we didn't see it live. They were showing a replay, or they were showing, you know, Ronaldo's face for the 400th time. We all needed that. And then it cuts back, and so then we get that replay at the end. And I'm so... I think it's great that it didn't happen, in the sense that, like, it would have been maybe an unfair way for that game to end, but at the same time, Ghana played their way back in, and it would have been incredible. It would have been one of my favorite moments of the World Cup ever if that had happened. It would be a thing we'd be talking about for many, many, many years.
The only reason I'm glad it didn't happen was I quite like Diogo Costa as a goalkeeper.
Agreed.
I feel like if that happens to him, he's the goalkeeper who got punked at the World Cup, essentially. I mean, it was like the footballing equivalent of the Jason Momoa meme, crouching behind Henry Cavill as he's about to...
For me, like, really not enjoying Ronaldo, broadly speaking, but especially so these days. The slow-mo of him thinking, this game has gone wrong. If that had happened, that would be... I don't want to buy an NFT, but that might be what I would buy of him just looking horrified and sad if that had happened. Unfortunately, here we are with Portugal getting the win.
Yes, indeed. And you mentioned Ronaldo and close-ups of his face. He was crying in an anthem. The anthem, it means so much to him, Taylor. It means so much.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Like, his agent told him to cry, right? Like, I feel like he is that much of a machine of, like, you must give me the sympathetic face. Like, he practices those faces in the mirror.
He needed some B-roll for his next Piers Morgan interview, I think, and that was what it was going to be.
Yes, and we are talking about a man who has had, like, tragedy in his personal life, so I should remember that when I'm sure it is a moving moment to hear your anthem, to be around your teammates, to ponder what might have been. But at the same time, I have my frustrations with him on a different level.
Indeed. Less said about
variety
that,
of levels,
the better. Graham, one more thing I wanted to pick up on this game. When you mentioned about Portugal maybe not making a deep run in this tournament, is that a reassessment after watching this game, or is that a thought that, because, you know, they are the kind of team who could grind their way through this thing?
They could. I'm not ruling it out entirely, but it's not a reassessment, this Portugal team, particularly that first half. The only thing that would change my opinion is if Fernando Santos looks at that second half and how actually embracing the attack and embracing a little bit of chaos does make Portugal a stronger team, and then changes that for the next fixture, and that's the way Portugal play from now on, then that maybe does change my opinion. But having watched this game, it's not a reassessment. Portugal were the team that I expected them to be before this tournament, and I just don't have them in my kind of top tier of maybe five or six teams. I think they're in that second tier of teams.
It's a reinforcement, not a reassessment, I think.
All right, that's fair enough then. Let's take a quick break with Portugal, top of Group H, as we finish the first round of games in this World Cup. When we come back, let's talk about Brazil and their win over Serbia. Back shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our World Cup Day 5 review. Let's head to Brazil 2, Serbia 0. Joe, what did you make of this one from the outset? It seems like we were a bit frustrated with Brazil, not just because of their setup in which they had no midfield, I think, or maybe five attackers, seven if you count the fullbacks.
Casemiro, that was a midfield.
Casemiro, yeah. And yeah, Casemiro was like, yeah, good luck, Casemiro, with the midfield.
It felt like this game should have been from the jump, and it really wasn't, which is the frustrating bit. So Brazil, we all sort of had a little geek out moment when the lineup dropped. Oh my goodness, they're really doing it. It's Lucas Paqueta, it's Rafinha, it's Neymar, it's Vinicius Jr., it's Richarlison, all in the same lineup. It really is Casemiro, who got a little handshake and said good luck out there. And I think it was built to be fun from the jump as well, because Serbia have been fun at times recently as well. So I wanted this thing to have fireworks in the beginning. It did not, like many of the other games we've seen recently. It took a while for Brazil to wake up. I think they needed a bit of calibrating, and they did get there eventually. I had some of my frustrations with them in the first half, though. They didn't seem to be playing with a whole lot of purpose. It felt to me like Brazil were a little bit stagnant, and they weren't getting much of anything from the fullbacks. Danilo,
you guys know we're Brazil, right? Like, it felt like that kind of attitude a little bit at times.
Yeah, can you just get out of the way? We will some, but we'd rather not. I mean, it felt like Danilo...
We got a Nike commercial to cut.
Yeah, come on, chop, people, come on. Danilo would come inside and play in midfield. He wasn't really providing much of anything in that space. I don't think he is the best option to do that. Alexandro provided nothing to my eye in this game. And then you have this weird structure where it is a lot of attackers, and maybe the spacing is not quite optimal. Now, it did all sort of turn out fine for Brazil in this game. They turn it on in the second half, and Richarlison scores one of the best goals I've seen in recent memory. Certainly, maybe the best goal of this World Cup. Certainly, maybe that's a hot take for people. Maybe. Yeah, certainly, maybe it was.
Possibly. Don't commit too hard.
My heart still feels for that Gavi one yesterday, so I'm split a bit between those things. But Brazil, not the most impressive team I've seen at this tournament so far. I will say they get this win. They are really one of the big teams to beat an actually good team compared to someone like England who blow out Iran, compared to a couple of France against Australia, that kind of thing. This felt different, and it took them a while to get calibrated, as I said, but I think at the end of the day, other than Neymar's injury, which we don't have a lot more info about, things turned out fine for Brazil.
It wasn't quite as wild as the lineup suggested. I think when we saw that lineup, we were all expecting just the most chaotic performance of the World Cup so far. And essentially what happened was Thiago Silva and Marquinhos get pushed into the central midfield area. That is the midfield, basically, in terms of having them control and having your platform for possession there. It was a lineup that basically said, we know we're going to play the whole game in the opposition half, and we're here to win the World Cup. And I guess it worked for Brazil in the second half. And by the end of the second half, I thought, okay, this is quite impressive. They've got clearly a lot of options. I was very impressed with Richarlison. Obviously scores that amazing goal, gets two goals, so maybe that's stating the obvious, but in terms of his general play as well, and just the physical presence that he gives Brazil, something a little bit different. I'm pretty sure I've said this on the pod before, but I think a lot of fans get Richarlison wrong. I think a lot of Premier League fans see a skillful Brazilian and think, well, there's a soft-centred winger, essentially, who's going to beat a man. Yeah. I think Antonio Conte, who's obviously signed him for Tottenham this summer, knows exactly what he is. And we talked about it in the summer, I'm pretty sure, saying that Richarlison would do well in an Atletico Madrid team. And I think having that physical threat and that poophousery and just having someone who can take opportunities in the penalty box, which obviously he did here, I'm not sure Brazil, even someone like Gabriel Jesus, who's been excellent for Arsenal this season, he's not really that player. So arguably, he's one of the most important players, and I'm a big fan of Richarlison. So I saw someone on Twitter say that he's the Brazilian Miroslav Klose. I'd argue he's more of a physical threat than Miroslav Klose ever was, but it's along kind of similar lines to that.
And there were plenty of opportunities for other Brazilian attackers so that he's able to take both of his, including that acrobatic kick. It speaks to like the form, the confidence, and the self-belief that you have to have. I wish Serbia had that level of self-belief and confidence, because this is a team that can be very attacking, can have plenty of talent going forward. And I think there's an argument that they could have taken this game to Brazil, especially this Brazil with that formation, with that lack of presence through the midfield or defensive presence through the midfield. There could have been a surprise there. And I think even Serbia thought, this is a very good Brazil team. We're going to sit off and be defensive. I think that Serbia, will be a very good team in the rest of this group. I still think they make it out. But it speaks volumes to me that even with the talent they have, the ability they have, they still sat very deep in my mind, or at least played very defensively, didn't play as many of their attacking options as they could have. And I think we're kind of paid the price for it in the end.
Is this a different game for Serbia? We talked about this when the lineups were released, Taylor, having watched the match. What's your opinion on Kostic if he's in that team and gives them a little bit of an outlet? So they're still in a low defensive block, but they have that outlet to get up the pitch.
Yeah, because I think, and even if you, I think Ryan was pretty surprised that Vlahovic didn't start this game. And that is one that they tend to change around. Sometimes it's a 3-4-1-2, sometimes it's a 3-4-2-1. But I do wonder if you have him there as a more sort of direct route one option to knock it down, and he can combine with Mitrovic. And then if you have more attacking wingers, you spread the field, I think you make Brazil have to think a little bit more on the defensive side than they did. More often it felt to me like if Serbia won the ball back, they're hoofing it long, they're trying something, but if it's not on, then they'll hoof it long and they're just giving the ball right back to Brazil.
And I think that's a big part of what makes this Brazil team so scary, is that they could take, granted, a slightly more conservative Serbia team in terms of their personnel, but they can take a team like Serbia and completely control the game, right? So Brazil weren't dominant in the first half. They weren't creating chance after chance after chance. There were a couple. Rafinha had a good moment that he just sort of hits a shot right at the goalkeeper. Brazil weren't dominant, but they were making darn sure that Serbia had no chances to be dominant. And Serbia made a play a part in that themselves. But that's what scares me about this Brazil team, is even with 87 attackers on the field, they still controlled the game quite well. I think their life will be more difficult, potentially even in some other games in this group, if Cameroon or Switzerland have taken notice of Serbia and how little they got in the attack. But that is what really makes, I think, a great World Cup team, is a team that can be a little Portugal-y in some ways, of being more conservative and defensive when they need to be, and just generally not opening up all the time. Brazil had flashes and elements of that, but they also had Brazil, which it felt like we saw in the second half. And that is what scares me a lot about this team.
Yeah, very deep team as well. Joe, one of my predictions for this tournament was about Lucas Paqueta, whose drum I'm going to keep banging, in that I thought he'd be a golden ball contender in this one. If Vinicius took the spot I was expecting Paqueta to take, who was back near the corner flag somewhere, it seemed, according to TJ. Just kidding. But Vinicius... I didn't think he had a great game. There was that point where he sort of kicked his own shoe when he had a chance, like basically one-on-one with the keeper. Does he do enough to stay in this team in that position, do you think?
I think he did enough to not get pulled out of the team. Yes, yeah. I don't think he had a particularly good game. He does have that assist to Richarlison, and that was a nice moment. It was not the game-breaking Real Madrid Vinicius Jr. that maybe we've seen. I think he misses in some ways playing off of Karim Benzema. Because who wouldn't, other than maybe somebody who doesn't want to get blackmailed. But all things considered, I think that is a really dangerous partnership for Madrid. Richarlison is a very different type of player. Neymar is a very different type of player. They don't bring others into the game in the same way that Karim Benzema does. Vinny Jr. is just so good. He is lightning quick. He had a couple of moments that really did make me go, oh, wow. In this game up the left side, it's just too early for me to think about changing the lineup. Honestly, Ryan, apologies to your prediction. If it's going to be somebody that comes out of this Brazil team, it's probably either Rafinha or Paqueta in exchange for someone else who's going to provide some different attacking element or maybe a bit more midfield stability. Or it could be a Neymar, because we don't know what that looks like, and that could change the calculus for Brazil as well.
I think this is one of your advanced stats, Joe. Confused/shocked expressions of a player.
Yeah.
I think Rafinha led the way in this game, because he had a couple different moments, especially to start the second half, I think it was, when Serbia basically give him the ball, he's in on goal, hits it right at the goalkeeper. You can see him realize... probably should have done way better there. There's a lot of people on that bench who could probably score that goal. And so maybe it's him who does sort of like fall by the wayside if they do want to change it up. But the other one that I think is worth noting, because I missed this at the time, is Neymar coming off with that injury.
Yeah.
We don't know the severity of that one. Graham, is there an argument that if you can't play Neymar, do you move Paqueta forward, or would you rather see them do something else?
It's a good question. I mean, my concern on the right side is with Rafinha. I'm just looking at who could come in for him. Mm. He is capable of kind of going both ways, and so maintains the width on the right side, which is important for Brazil with Danilo as your right back pushing into central midfield. Your options there are Rodrigo, who I guess can also go both ways, but Antony, as a Manchester United fan, I'm sure you'll know Taylor, every time he comes inside, yep. So you basically vacate that right side, and that is linked to what
is
Neymar does.
Is the greatest player in the world, though, so we shouldn't forget that, yeah.
Of course,
yeah,
of
called
course.
Antony, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what you do with Neymar. Yes, I guess it is certainly an option to push Paqueta further up the pitch, but then you have a question of, what do you do with central midfield? I guess maybe Fred comes in. There is a bit of a partnership there with Casemiro. We saw him in the second half in this game. Fabinho, he's an option, but that is maybe slightly too conservative with two anchors in central midfield. So there's certainly something to think about for Chiche if Neymar can't go for the second game. But
He's going to start Martinelli, isn't he? That's going to be his defensive solution. Put on another
and I'm here for it. Yeah. I am here for it.
I think, Graham, one of the things we spoke about this Brazil side in our previews was the strength of their defending as well. They had a very good defensive record in qualification. They've obviously shut out this Serbia side who have Vlahovic, Tadic, Milinkovic-Savic, yeah. A lot of players who are very strong on the continent. So do we still feel confident that they have the defence to take them deep in this tournament? I mean, I suppose let's rephrase that. They are a heavy favourite for this tournament. Has your opinion changed in any way after this game?
No, it hasn't changed after this. I haven't changed my opinion on their defence just because we didn't really see them being matched up to in this game. So yes, the defence keeps a clean sheet, but that comes from the control that they had in the game. And when you have a team that is able to get in behind them, and there will be a team that is able to do that, that's really going to be the serious test of this Brazilian defence. So I haven't changed my opinion on this defence, but that's not based on any evidence from this match, really.
Fair enough. Switzerland and Cameroon elsewhere in the group. Any of those guys going to get behind this Brazil back line, do we think, Joe?
Nope.
Nope. Good. All right. Brazil storming this group then. Are we all agreed?
Yep.
Good stuff. All right.
Expert analysis.
There we are. That's why we get the big bucks, Tater. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's look at the other couple of games that happened today, and we're going to give our very specific predictions. We're also going to take a little look around the horn, and now we've seen every team play. Back shortly.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Let's talk about the Group G opener that happened on this here Thanksgiving Day. Switzerland 1, Cameroon 0. Brian Mbolo getting the goal against Cameroon, the country of his birth. He refused to celebrate, Graham.
Yeah.
So much honour.
The first ever muted celebration in international football. I can't quite recall seeing one of those before.
Yeah, what did you think of this game? Let's talk about Cameroon. I saw them described on the BBC as unfortunate to lose this one.
Yeah, so the pattern of this match, just to give a quick recap of the game first of all, the pattern of this match was established pretty early on, where Switzerland were looking to get on the ball and Cameroon were quite happy to sit back and stay compact. And in the first half, Switzerland were funneling a lot of their play into the power cube and Ruben Vargas in the wide areas. But it was similar to how Croatia played against Morocco on Wednesday, where control didn't really equal chances and Cameroon didn't face a single shot on target in the first half. Cameroon, as you kind of referenced there, Ryan, I was relatively impressed with some of the things that I saw from them. There's a ceiling to how much I can praise
qualified
them.
Qualified praise.
Exactly,
there.
Yes. Keep in mind, this was not the best of matches, but nonetheless, right. there was some stuff that I liked from them, and they were quite dangerous. They looked relatively dangerous on the counter when they were able to get out from the low block. And the first opportunity of the match comes from a direct vertical pass from goes into Brandon Mbeumo, and that was saved by Sommer, and then Toko Akambi, he puts the rebound over. But the front three of Mbeumo, Toko Akambi, and then the new and improved Robert Lewandowski, Eric Choupo-Moting, they were fairly lively, and there was space in behind the Swiss fullbacks, and the two wide men in particular, I thought, did well to exploit at times some of that space. And if you look at the pass mat from Toko Akambi, you see how many of them were back inside for someone, usually Hongla, to play the ball forward into space. So in the first half, Cameroon looked the more dangerous of the two teams. Then Switzerland basically scored the goal that Cameroon wanted to score up until that point, a 13-pass sequence which ends with Mbolo scoring. And beyond that, Switzerland did a really good job of managing the game and Cameroon didn't really get back into it past that point. But even though it's a defeat for Cameroon, I want to see more of the good things that they did in their next couple games. But it is going to be difficult for them in that group now that they have suffered defeat in their first game.
Yeah, definitely so. As you say, both these teams got to face Brazil, so not getting points in this game, somewhat damaging for Cameroon. Taylor, what did you make of this one? What did you make of Switzerland? I thought, do you think they were good for the 3 points here? Jan Sommer was tested a few times, as Graham said.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to ask Joe a question, because I have an idea about Switzerland, specifically their defense, but Joe is the stat man who knows these things, so I will ask him for his expertise. When I look at this one, as you all said in the beginning, there's an idea that like maybe Cameroon a little bit hard done by, not to get a point or not to get something out of this one. The XG being 0.74 isn't great, but it still means like, yeah, maybe they're around a goal. But Joe, I look at the numbers from there, and it's a lot of shots, but a lot of shots that are very low percentage. So are you inclined to give that as like Cameroon should have done better? I know you love that one.
I do.
Or is that more so Switzerland doing a very good job defensively to limit clear-cut opportunities?
I think it's a combination of two things, Taylor. The first is Switzerland doing a fairly good job of denying opportunities. I think you look at those numbers. Cameroon took 8 shots, which is enough, but not a lot. It was one more than Switzerland had in this game. But they are from a lot of low-quality areas. There was one from outside the box, and a good chunk sort of outside the width of the 6-yard right. box. Those are not easy shots to convert, even though we do sort of think of them as being simple. It's hard to score goals in soccer. That's one bit to credit Switzerland. The other bit is, Graham, I agree with you. Cameroon did some good things in this game. I like bits and pieces of their attack, and I highlighted that in my preview. I don't think Cameroon is particularly well-drilled or well-structured in the attack, and that's not unique. They're not the only team that has that. Poland, we discussed about that. There's lots of teams that fit into this category. It looked to me like there wasn't always a lot of method to their attacking madness, which I think contributes a bit to why they don't get on the score sheet. I watched this game. I don't think Cameroon were particularly hard done by. Frankly, I thought Switzerland were the slightly better team, if only slightly. So that's kind of where I land on the whole Cameroon attacking thing.
What was the specific prediction for this one? Who had one for that one?
It was me. I predicted that Nuhu was going to do something Nuhu-y. He didn't really. There was no catastrophic defensive error or no really brilliant attacking moment. It was kind of just a standard run-of-the-mill fullback performance. The one thing I guess that could sort of count is he is the one who tries to close down Shaqiri before Shaqiri plays the ball in for Mbolo. Maybe it's a bit slow, but I don't think that's a Nuhu moment. He didn't kick a beer can, although that was never going to happen in Qatar.
It definitely wasn't.
Yeah, I'll do one quick beat on Switzerland.
Binoculars full of booze, maybe. We saw that one happen.
We did. We did see that. Maybe he boots those through to Rosie. One beat on Switzerland. I don't think they were fantastic in this game, but they did have a couple of nice attacking patterns that I picked up on. I thought them either funneling play or driving play down their right side and playing through Shaqiri as a playmaker, or starting possession maybe on the left and switching it slowly over to the right side, which is what they did for that goal that Mbolo scores. The play goes from left over to the right. Shaqiri plays the ball into Mbolo. Switzerland did take a lot of high-quality shots in this game. They did a pretty good job of getting into that 6-yard box central area. That's where you want to be shooting from, which is why they only took 7 shots, but their XG was so high in this match. Watching how they progress down that right wing and play through Shaqiri, watching how Xhaka and Freuler get on the ball and funnel it out to Shaqiri, and then Shaqiri finding, whether it's Mbolo or maybe another winger making a run, maybe it's Vargas crashing from the left side. That was somewhat promising for Switzerland, and we'll see if that pattern returns over their final 2 games of the group stage.
It's sort of amazing how Shaqiri continues to produce for Switzerland in the big matches. I read that he's had a direct hand in half of all the goals Switzerland have scored at their last 4 major tournaments.
Maybe the Chicago Fire are going to
I was
going to
say,
Cup, right?
I bet the Chicago Fire wish they could sign that player.
Yeah. Well, they'll be World Cup champions finally if they do that, Graham. I wanted to ask about Choupo-Moting. Taylor, who was rumoured to be coming to Man United. Loosely rumoured, I suppose, to replace Cristiano Ronaldo.
Isn't everyone rumoured to be coming to Man United these
Apple.
Days?
Apple, Facebook.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be 400 owners with like $11 billion between them. It's going to be great.
He's going to be called the Choupo-Moting Pro.
Okay, yep. I'm excited. Yeah, yes.
Anything you saw in this game made you think that would be fun to have him at Old Trafford,
Nah. All right. No, I mean he's been impressive for Bayern, but I think as much as I would like to give him the credit for that, that also feels to be a thing where if you can kind of were the Lewandowski understudy and now you are starting in place of him, it's a bit like the running back who does a very good impersonation of the starting running back coming in doing a good job, but that doesn't necessarily mean you should go in and get that person. And in this case, I think Choupo-Moting having a good time at Bayern, let's not ruin that, let's not derail another career by having him come to Man United and maybe not fit in until they have all of their billionaires in place.
Wonderful stuff. Graham, either of these teams go through, do you think?
Switzerland seemed to do it defying logic every time, so yeah, I guess so.
Them or Serbia, right? So we shall see there. The other game we're going to discuss from the 5 a.m. crew, if memory serves correct, Uruguay 0. Now this was the 8 a.m. game, wasn't it? Uruguay 0, South Korea 0. It was that memorable. It stuck in my mind that hard that I remember the specific time it happened. I mean, Joe, of every World Cup match in history, this was one of them.
Yeah, it really was. Would you say in your intro that if you're having trouble sleeping, put this on in the background?
Yeah.
It did have a lot of that to it. I'll give a brief rundown of sort of what I thought the game was like. It was a lot of passing around, somewhat sloppily. Neither team really ever finding a huge groove. Neither team creating all that much either. I didn't love this performance from Uruguay, and I thought they would be a little bit better in this match than they were. South Korea were also fine, but a bit bland. Hyungmin Son didn't do a lot for them, although he was trying to create from the left, cutting in on his right foot. Mm. It seemed like, for me, South Korea, most of their attacking moves ended with either a turnover or a cross, and that is a lot of what we see in international soccer from time to time. One thing that disappointed me about this game was Darwin Nunez, who I was looking forward to watching. He had a 55% pass completion rate. 55%. That's really low. Really, really low. It was lower than any of his Premier League games this season, according to Opta. He did not play well. I think there were several moments in this game where we noted that he was playing a pass to not the right person or just struggling with his touch. I mean, it was not a performance that Darwin Nunez will want to watch back before he goes to bed. I'll say that much. Just disappointing a bit for both teams. I think South Korea are probably a little happier on the day about getting this point, but yeah, like you said, Ryan, not a memorable game particularly.
I don't have the numbers, Joe, but I feel like every Uruguay player will have low pass completion, or attacking player, I should say, because the final ball seemed to be terrible every time.
Yeah, and not only that, in the first half, this is a stat that I've got noted down. In the first half, 12% of all the passes played by both teams, not just Uruguay, were long balls. So that tells you what the focus was for both teams. And that's maybe not surprising with South Korea. They're trying to get Son in behind. But that was a surprising aspect of their game, was Son seemed to be out on the left side. He seemed to be playing in front of the Uruguayan defense. And look, some of that is because of the low defensive Uruguayan block. He doesn't really have a choice. But I thought we'd see a lot more of South Korea trying to immediately get him in behind. And we never really had that moment from him, despite the fact there was so much speculation and reporting about whether he was going to be fit enough to play. Then he does play. And it was a bit disappointing. We didn't really see the best Son in this match.
We did get the meme moment of him making a weird face from behind the mask.
Yes, we did.
The referee in like the 5th minute.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, as did I. I did not get my prediction point for this one. I thought Fede Valverde would cover the most distance. He was second. I think it's really interesting that Darwin Nunez was third. And part of that, I'm assuming, is because he was doing some defensive work. He was coming back onto the left side. But I also have to believe a lot of that was that sort of long ball, the direct play, him making a lot of runs in behind, trying to make something happen. And I think that also tells a little bit of the tale, that he is covering ground both in defense, also trying to get into the attack and not really having much joy. I did not think this was a particularly impressive game for him, though I think he finishes it out. It's Cavani coming on for Suarez, right?
Yeah.
But still, I think Nunez, it's just like I said this when we were watching it, that Community Shield game, which we should never give weight to the Community Shield game, but it did feel like, oh, they figured it out. This guy's going to be that next level player for them. And to see him since then, it feels like there's always just a little thing off, a little thing missing. And even with Uruguay in this game, it wasn't quite there. I hope that changes throughout this tournament because I think he could be a really special player.
All right. I like this this note from Jonathan Wilson in his match report of this game. There appears to be three sorts of games at this World Cup. There are games in which the stronger team batters the weaker team, Spain, England, France. There are shocks in which the stronger team is undone by an opponent that's slightly better than is anticipated, Saudi Arabia and Japan. And there are evenly matched games in which nothing much happens. This. So I quite like the categorization there.
I do too. Like, a more cynical person might say, like, isn't that a fancy way of saying there are games in which the good team wins, there are games in which the good team doesn't win, and then there are games when two teams play evenly and one of them maybe ends up winning?
This sounded better, though.
Yeah, it does. It just feels like, yeah, that's about how the sport goes sometimes.
Jonathan Wilson, the genius, Taylor. Come
yes,
on.
Of course. Brandon Ajar.
All right, any more on this game before we move on, gents?
I will just say, having done the Uruguay preview, I was pretty disappointed in this performance. And I think part of that, maybe incorrectly, I think because I wasn't sure Son would play. So I did think this would be a pretty vulnerable Korea team. I thought if you don't have Son or if he's not fully fit, they're going to be more defensive. It's going to allow for Uruguay to have more possession, to move the ball around. They have such good technical ability in the midfield. I mean, even in the defense, we saw Godin stride forward on occasion. Same thing for Jimenez. The attack has youth, but also experience. I expected more from Uruguay, and I thought this was a frustrating performance, broadly speaking, but also when we're looking at the teams that we've seen so far. We're going to do a Patreon episode about, now that we've seen everybody, who's impressed, who hasn't impressed, who are like the teams we think are most likely to go far. Uruguay feel like a team that could go like on maybe the downside, a team that maybe isn't as strong, isn't as likely to make a run, and that's not where I expect them to be at this point.
All right, good stuff. If you tune into our Patreon feed, we're going to be talking in detail about the teams we've seen so far. We've seen every team, all 32 of them, Joe. We're going to talk about the best ones and the worst ones so far. But just a quick whistle wetter, Graham. That was hard to say for this one. Are you including England in your team of the most impressive teams? What do you think? Yes, 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 yes.
No, it's going to take a lot more than six goals for me to include England.
Seven?
Well, a team that did score seven actually probably have been the most impressive for me. Spain, I am pretty hot on Spain right now. I expected them to be good at this tournament. And I know they played Costa Rica, who might be one of the weaker teams in this tournament.
No, they are. Yeah, no, they are.
Okay, thanks, Joe, for that clarification. But nonetheless, kind of reading into their performance, there was a lot to like in there. I think they'll be able to replicate that against stronger teams. So I think Spain so far for me have been the best team so far.
Yeah, it's a strange one because we've had certain games in which we have to remind ourselves maybe it's the opponent who isn't particularly strong. So that might be England versus Iran. That might be Ecuador versus Qatar. And then even France versus Australia. It's sort of like they could be very good. It might also be that they were playing a very bad opponent. And with Spain, I think it's the case that they were playing an opponent that was not very good on the day and didn't look particularly strong, and they still were incredibly impressive. So even if it was weak opposition, I still have Spain at the very top of my list.
All right, let's find out who else is on that list and who is at the bottom of those rankings on our Patreon. But for now, one last thing to do on this here podcast, our very specific predictions for Friday's slate of games. The 5 a.m. gang, is going to be watching Iran versus Wales. And then at 8, we've got Qatar taking on Senegal and Qatar, the host second game of this tournament. The 11 a.m. Eastern game is the Netherlands taking on Ecuador. And then 2 p.m. Eastern, the big one, England 2, USA 0. Can't wait for that one to happen. Let's go around the table and start getting our BSPs in, though. Joe, give us one for Iran versus Wales, the early game, the other game from Group B.
So Iran are the ones who got battered between these two teams, but I thought both of them were pretty poor on match day one in Group B. I'm going to say that neither team will have more than 80% pass completion percentages, which is just code for both are bad at having the ball. Wales were bad at having the ball. Even in the second half, they really weren't all that good at having the ball against the U.S. And Iran just, I feel for Iran and a lot of the players in the off-field situation that they are trying to process, I would imagine, and sort through. That was just a bad performance. Yeah. It was a really, one of the worst soccer games I've seen from a single team in a long time. So I'm saying both teams are going to have less than 80% pass completion percentages. I'm just hoping that sucker ends in a draw. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you. I think I feel like it's going to be like World War One style, like both of them just in their trenches on opposite sides. Like, no, you, just lobbing it back. It's going to be soccer tennis in that way. It's just going to be lobbing it back and forth, and we'll see what happens.
Very good indeed. The 8 a.m. game, Qatar versus Senegal. Taylor, what you thinking here?
All right, Joe, I'm going with numbers here. So you tell me what you think of this.
Okay.
I am saying, first of all, that I think Senegal will, or at the very least should, be dominant in this game. I'm going to go with, though Qatar, maybe we're overwhelmed by the situation, and maybe in their second game there is more confidence or they are more aggressive, I still think Senegal were the more impressive of those two teams in their openers. So I think Senegal will win.
Yeah.
I think they will be much more aggressive. So I have it as Senegal will attempt 130 or more line breaks in this game. Looking at their past game, Senegal attempted 110 versus the Netherlands. Ecuador went for 124 versus Qatar in that opener. So I think Senegal will be equal to the number that the Dutch went for. I think they're going to really, really be aggressive against Qatar, and they're going to try to play in behind, break some lines, score some goals.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And you clarified I was going to do it. Line breaks, basically, FIFA's recording a bunch of these stats, and they're putting them out on the internet and referencing them on the broadcast. That's just if you try to complete a line-breaking pass. That's all it is, breaking through some sort of line of the opposing defense. I love it, Taylor. Good number use.
Thank you. You're welcome, my friend. I also think that's partially to do with if Qatar are sort of going for it, I think they will then leave some space.
Yes.
There will be opportunities to play through that. So I think in that way, Senegal also going to be a strong team.
The precursor to England versus USA.
Thanks, Joe. Joe, give me a thumbs up, ladies.
Netherlands versus Ecuador. Graham, your very specific prediction.
So my VSP for that game is that there will be an instance where one of either Pervis Estupiñán or Denzel Dumfries carries the ball a long way up the wing, loses the ball, and then the other player carries the ball in the opposite direction immediately afterwards. Those two are going to chase each other.
This is my favorite prediction that's been made.
Me too, this is good.
Those two are going to chase each other for 90 minutes. They're both such an important part of, to be serious for a second about the game plan and what it'll tell us about the game, they're both such an important part of how their teams progress the ball, and they will have a whole wing to themselves. So I think at times it could be a track meet almost to a comedic effect. So yeah, that's my VSP for that game.
All right, let's get to VSPs for England versus USA. Just for a larf, we're all going to give one, shall we? Should we do that?
Kind of forgot we were going to do that. Can I go last?
Sure you can.
Thank you.
I'll go first then in the spirit of things. My prediction is that England, I'm sorry to say this, listener, are going to win 1-0 or 2-0.
Boo.
So it's going to be under 2.5 goals, but specifically a 1-0 or 2-0 win for England. England have won 8 of their 11 meetings with the US. The US haven't beaten a European team in their last 10 World Cup matches. Obviously, it's going to be a first half, second half situation, I think, here, Joe. I think if England can contain that early press, that early pressure from the US, they should come out on top of this one, because England tend to do better in the second half, and particularly the second half of the second half, when you look at England in these big tournament games, whereas that's a time when the US kind of, the productivity goes down a little bit. So I think this game is won in the second half, and I don't think it's going to be a blowout win. I think it could be pretty cagey, particularly that first half. But all of the US's last 4 games have been under 2.5 goals.
Yeah.
2 of the last 3 meetings between these sides, under 2.5 goals. So I think a 1-0 or a 2-0 win for England, that's what I'm going with.
I think it's fair. I hate to say this. I think that is a very fair prediction. I wrote an article for Backheel along with Jamin Moore before this tournament started about how the US's secret, the US's superpower, excuse me, in this tournament really is their defending. They have still yet under Greg Berhalter to develop a really cohesive attacking identity. It seems to vary from game to game and even from half to half, as you mentioned there, Ryan. Defensively, the U.S., I think, is quite good, right? They can be very disciplined. The only reason why they give up a goal against Wales is the Walker Zimmerman slip up defensively. It is in the box that gives up the penalty. I think the U.S. is a very strong defensive team, and England, I don't think, is nearly as good in the attack as they showed against Iran, because Iran made them look good. So, Ryan, I think a low-scoring game, now I'm hoping it goes a slightly different way, but a low-scoring game feels like a good bet to me.
All right, thank you very much. Graham Ruthven, your VSP for this game.
So my VSP is that Tyler Adams will regain possession 20 or more times.
You got to pick another one now.
I got to scramble now.
Yeah, so it seems that I've stolen Taylor's thunder there. But yeah, I've gone with Tyler Adams to
That's
regain
what you get for going last.
I know.
Possession 20 or more times. He made more possession regains than any other player against Wales. That number was 11. I think he's going to have to be even sharper to stop England from playing through the US on Friday. So I think that number of 11 is going to inflate quite a bit. I also predict that Ryan will stand for the national anthem, and Taylor, Joe, and I will all be quietly furious about it.
Yeah, why would that make you angry? Me being patriotic?
Just do you need an answer?
Something about it.
So you said he's going to recover the ball 20 times?
Yes.
Light work.
Wow.
It's a 10-minute job for Tyler Adams.
6 against Wales.
No, 11. 11 against Wales.
Oh, okay. All right. We had different numbers. Yours were better.
Who's being sloppy on England to make that happen?
Declan Rice.
Declan Rice, yeah.
Harry Maguire, if he's playing. Come on.
Recoveries off Harry Maguire from... Okay. All right.
Maybe it's a turn. I don't know what it is.
I just think England are going to have so much of the ball in that game that number is going to naturally inflate. And that was FIFA's numbers that said 11. So that gave me a benchmark. And I think the US is going to be bunkered for more of that game. So it makes sense that number would be higher.
Fair dues. Joseph, yours.
Fair dues. Wow. I love how many new Ryan phrases I've learned over the last
fair
week.
Fair dues, Gavna.
Fair dues. I said goodnight to Ryan last night. He said, goodnight, Squire, for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anyway.
And you cleverly made it sound medieval because of knight and squire. I didn't even see that one.
Yeah, I wasn't. Ryan wasn't trying to be clever. Anyway, my VSP, maybe. Taylor, maybe I'm giving too much to Berhalter here, Graham. Maybe I am. But I'm predicting that someone other than Christian Pulisic will take the set pieces. I'm hoping the coaching staff has seen the light that they have not seen really since Christian Pulisic started playing international soccer. And I'm hoping that someone who can do better than 1 for 6 in terms of completing set pieces and putting the ball in someone's head, and when it is to someone, maybe not to Brendan Aaronson at the back post, I'm hoping that someone other than Christian Pulisic is going to take the set pieces. So I'm speaking it into existence right now by VSPing it on this show. Somebody other than Pulisic is going to take the set pieces.
Okay. Taylor, have you thought of a very specific prediction, or should we play all 8 minutes of November Rain while you're waiting?
We should do that anyway. Okay. And then hopefully not get sued.
I was going to say.
I have my... It's frustrating, though, because the Tyler Adams one is great, Graham. It is also, I think, slightly like optimistic in the sense of like, oh, they're going to be frustrating England. There's going to be opportunities to win the ball back. England may be a little bit wasteful. It could be good. I'm going negative. Tim Weah will have fewer than 20 touches in the first half. I think if the United States is conservative, if they are sitting deep, if they are looking long for him as the vertical threat, I think that doesn't give him much time on the ball, many opportunities. I think it's going to be a lot of him doing defensive work and then trying to facilitate transitions to attack. He will do it as easily as I said those words. So I think he won't get as many touches on the ball. My hope would be that as the game goes on, which is why I haven't said anything about the second half, that is a stronger performance from him, both on the ball and in front of goal.
If that one comes in, do you think George Weah will tweet, my son, Timothy Weah,
has less than 21 touches? Yeah.
It'll be like, congratulations to Timothy Weah, my son, for having a goal again. Like, it's very formal. Yeah,
gotta love
I like it.
Gotta love it. All right, I think we should consider this pod thoroughly casted. Joe Lowry, thank you very much for your contributions.
Yeah, right back at you, Ryan.
Taylor Rockwell, thank you, sir.
Right back at you, my friend.
Graham Rutland, thank you, and don't you worry about me standing up for the anthem. It'll be fine. You don't need to worry yourself.
I will, but thank you anyway, Ryan Bailey.
Listener, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you had fun. We'll be back on the feed with a review of USA England and all of those games from Friday's slate tomorrow. But for now, bye!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.